Welcome to the Industry Talks podcast. I'm your host, Roman Perry. This week we have Laura Scude. She is an artist, an entrepreneur, an innovator, and a live show designer. She has developed live shows with Herbie Hancock, Cirque du Soleil, and Kanye West. She also has a live show production company that has worked with artists like Charlie XCX and The Weeknd. She has a deep understanding of music technology and is a trailblazer when it comes to what can be done in a live setting. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Laura. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did.
Industry Talks.
Very cool. So we're recording. We're live now. Welcome to the Industry Talks podcast, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Why don't you just take a second and tell the people what you do. Just tell me what you do. Get the full story directly from you. That would be great.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm an artist, I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm a live show programmer and designer. Mm-hmm. So I do all things music, a lot in the live performance realm, especially. Yeah. I'm also a music producer and perform my own music live and do a lot of stuff with controllers. And I design and program shows for artists and have toured a lot with different artists. I toured with Kanye West for 7 years. I've worked with Cirque du Soleil, The Weeknd, Herbie Hancock, bunch of folks.
Wow.
So yeah, it's been kind of all across the board, but all music all the time.
That's awesome. So what does a live show producer do? Like, what is that, like, live show programmer, live show producer? Like, what is that? What are your responsibilities there? Like, what does that mean?
It's basically any show that you see, there's could be a band, there could not be a band, depending on the act. And most often times you'll hear music that the band is not playing, right? So in order for the audience to hear the music the way that they heard it on the album, there needs to be some form of backing tracks.
Right.
And so this is called music playback. And what we do is edit these tracks to make sure that they sound the way that the artist and the musical director wants them to sound like.
Okay.
Sometimes we act as the musical director as well and work directly with the artist. And we come up with versions, remixes, transitions. So if, say, for example, if you're at a big hip-hop show and Drake all of a sudden is going to come out and rap his verse, we need that song without Drake's verse in it, or we need that song with that space for Drake's verse in it.
Right.
So we're responsible for creating those edits to make sure that the music is played back the way that everyone expects it to be.
Okay.
And on top of that, we are responsible for timecode or MIDI that syncs to the lighting and video.
Okay.
For the show. So when you go to a big concert and you get to the chorus of a song and all the lights in the video do this, the same thing every night, that's all triggered from something called timecode from the Ableton Live session that we're running.
Right.
And on top of that, we do like vocal effects for artists, auto-tune, delays, distortion, pitch shifting in the moment in real time. So we manipulate the artist's vocals depending on who they are. And then other artists, like, for example, I worked with Porter Robinson on his show and Herbie Hancock. It's teaching them how to perform their own tracks live since they are the controllerist on stage. So
right.
It's a little bit of a different scenario than the other cases that I mentioned, because those artists don't really care what you're doing in the background versus the producer instrumentalist who wants to control their own tracks really wants to be hands-on. And so it's our job to make sure that they have the controls that they want on stage.
Okay. So in the instance of, just this is my own curiosity, but in the instance of like using live vocal effects and things like that, is that something that you would do in the box, like in the computer, or would you use like an external processor and then maybe trigger presets on that external processor?
So I like to
or
do
does it depend on?
I mean, it depends. You know, I like to do it all in the box. So we have different systems and everything's redundant, meaning there's a backup system, because when we're doing a huge show and if one system goes down, you need to be able to have a second one.
Right.
Or else you lose your job very quickly.
Yeah.
So we've got generally a set of systems for the music playback, and then a set for vocal effects. And that's like auto-tune and all that kind of stuff. Some artists do really like outboard vocal effects. For instance, like TC Helicon, right. The Harmony stuff is like really widely used. But mostly in general, it's just easy for us to roll up with a laptop and an Apollo and do auto-tune on that and do some other effects that are just within the session.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you worry about, latency when that happens, or?
Yeah. I mean, there's always that concern, you know, about latency, but, in general, that's why we separate the systems, because if there's a lot of backing tracks in the system and you're doing vocals through it, then the latency is going to be higher and the buffer size is going to be higher. So we generally just separate the systems and keep the buffer size lower.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So you have a backing track system and then a vocal effect system and then things like
exactly
that.
And we know like how far we can push it, and that's the great thing about auto-tune now being built into the UAD system with the Antares real time, so that offloads some of the pressure on Ableton Live as the host. And we generally just try to add a few effects but not too many so that we have to raise the buffer size.
Okay.
So the artist can still feel comfortable and not hear that latency. So generally, like anything over 64 for buffer size is just like
starts to get kind of shaky.
Yeah.
Yeah. You said you worked with Kanye West for 7 years. What were your responsibilities during that time, like touring with him? Were you kind of overseeing the rig, or were you like performing, or what was that like? Like what kind of responsibilities were did you have doing that?
Yeah, so a few different. My main responsibility was setting up all the equipment every day, making sure all that works, sound checking all of that, and then making the edits to the music. So if he decided that he wanted to play a new song or a different song or wanted to remix a song or wanted to add sound effects to a song or wanted to transition from in a new song to a new song, like I basically had to make all of that stuff happen for him. So it was a lot of working very closely with him and his team to really dial in the sounds of the music night after night.
So almost playing the role of like the whole band.
Yeah.
In some ways.
He had one band member, Mike Dean, who's awesome and playing keys and all that stuff. And so in order to support Mike, you know, we had like all the backing tracks and clicks and all that kind of stuff that band members might need to keep in the pocket when they're performing live.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, and then also on top of doing all the edits to the music and making sure that was right, all of his vocal effects. So like his auto tune, and I would improvise with him when he, you know, had his moments where he would be on stage and kind of go into singing and not singing and do a lot of delays and pitch shifting and all that kind of stuff.
What type of control service would you use in that situation?
I was actually using a Wii controller.
No
for
way.
That. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you like the nunchuck, like the two-part nunchuck thing?
Just the one, not the nunchuck, but just the main Wii.
Just the main TV remote one?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So you could use that to like modulate all your effects and things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's super sick.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was like playing a video game every night with his voice.
Yeah. would you trigger your scenes doing that too? Or would you launch all your clips, like the sections of the song using that? Or would that automatically run through? Or what was that like?
So I would trigger the different presets for the vocal effects with that. So like song after song, like the auto tune would be in a different key and also a different tempo. So I would trigger like the plus button on the Wii, and it would just go down to the next scene, and it would automatically change it to the next key and then the next tempo of the next song.
So it was all dialed in.
Yeah.
That's totally awesome. Yeah. I never would have expected the Wii remote.
Yeah. It's a handy little thing. Yeah. It fits in your hand really well. And so, yeah, it's good for improvising.
And you can really like, I remember I was messing around with the Guitar Hero controller, like the Wii Guitar Hero controller, because you could program it in. I forget the program. It was like something OSC, because I saw Ian Golden do that.
Oh, yeah.
On DJ Tech Tools.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I think I can figure that out, how to do that.
Nice.
That was fun, but I was using Traktor.
Oh, okay.
I was using Traktor with that back in the day. So you've been in Ableton for a decent amount of time now, which is very cool. How have you seen it progress over the years? Like, what are the sort of things that are Ableton in, you know, 2019 compared to Ableton in 2005? And maybe where you would like to see it head in the future?
Well, I mean, in 2005, there was a lot of features, but MIDI was just kind of like had been there for a version or two. So a lot of the capabilities were very, you know, different than they are now and functionality. But I would say like the main thing that is different is really the culture, you know?
Okay.
So like back then, not a lot of people knew about it and not a lot of people used it. And Pro Tools was the industry standard.
Right.
And things have really shifted, definitely, especially in the last couple of years. And to see it grow and change and see people talking about it that wouldn't have talked about it 10 years ago is really, really interesting. And they've done a great job of like building the culture and the community around the product. So I wish they would have more frequent updates for sure.
Right.
For me, but I also like, it does take a lot of CPU, especially with some of the plugins that I'm using. So I really want it to learn how to play nice,
right,
with certain things better. But in general, like it's the only thing that I use now, and I definitely push it to its limits in my own live performance stuff. And, you know, just like there's no other software out there that lets me do that. So,
Well, because you can kind of take, the coolest part about it is you can take the session that you're working on in the studio and then bring that into the live situation without really changing too much.
Mm-hmm.
You can just switch over to the different view.
Yeah.
Which is really like, I mean, no other program can do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Can we talk about your live performance?
Yeah,
like
sure.
Like what goes into that? Like what goes into, maybe talk about your music project as well. Just what goes into, I definitely want to hear about your live performance, like what that setup is like and just how it goes, like what goes into it.
Yeah. So I'm first and foremost a violinist and I've been performing since I was five. So quite some time in college, I got into performing violin with DJs. And so, I really just started learning how to produce and learning how to perform on my own and like developing my live set. And so I'm a one woman controllerist and I call my sound future classical. So it's a combination of my classical upbringing with futuristic bass and synth sounds. And my live show is definitely a combination of looping, of triggering different samples and effects, and sometimes backing tracks, sometimes recording everything from scratch. It's just a very big experiment, basically. So I've been doing a lot of work with the Unreal gaming engine as well. So I'm triggering live visuals that are from the VR platform in real time.
Really?
Yeah, with my controllers. And so that's been really, really fun. I just did a show in New York last weekend that was really well received. And so that's kind of my next phase, is doing this like real time collaboration to control like this gaming engine and seeing the visuals. It's like cinematic quality 3D visuals in real time. And it's like a couple years ago, that wouldn't have been possible. So it's like really, really cool to see it all come to life. And yeah, so I've got, you know, a pretty like diverse live set. It's not really necessarily dance music. It's like a combination. There's some parts that are danceable, but it's more like, you know, listening music. And I think my area or place where I love to perform the most is like theater type settings,
right,
where people are sitting and they can take the whole thing in, and you know, because there's a lot to watch. So
especially with like the cinematic element.
Yeah, definitely. And I've played my fair share of clubs and all of that too. But there's just something magical about a setting where people are there to like watch the performance, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah,
that's amazing. I never would have thought to use like doing real time visual stuff with Unreal. Are there, you're working with, I'm assuming you're working with developers for that?
Like Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's like a whole other specialty.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, a friend of mine, he's been doing this stuff for a long time, and he used to do a lot of touch designer stuff for Artists Live and visuals for Skrillex and Michael Jackson and all different kinds of people. So, he's a good friend of mine. His name is Scott Pagano, and he and I have been collaborating on it. So it's really awesome to work with him.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It adds a whole another dimension to my show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you managing to, cause you said you play violin. How are you managing to run your show while you're playing violin, or do you have an assistant that's helping you out, or?
No, I do it all myself.
Okay.
You know, it's all like, I just put the violin down and trigger stuff and play beats and synths and then pick the violin up and do looping stuff. And I've got some foot controllers and, you know, hand controllers and the Wii controller, and I just use it all. Yeah.
I really feel like, I actually just read that, I forget that, like, meat of the article, but I basically just read an article that was talking about a lot of live looping musicians that they're starting, like, live looping is starting to be a very mainstream thing, especially with somebody like Ed Sheeran. And I feel like that's kind of a sort of a trend heading towards the future, is because instead of having a folk musician that's just there with his acoustic guitar, you now have, like, you can sound like a full band just on your own and have it be live and improvisational. And and I really think that's, like, I mean, especially with the overhead that it costs to tour the band.
For sure.
Sometimes it might make sense to have maybe a live looping setup, depending on what the music is like.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's interesting that you're touching upon that because, you know, obviously I've worked with a bunch of big artists with huge budgets, and I have a lot of smaller artists that have come to me and said, like, can you work with us? Can you help us? So, I decided to develop a program online called Transmute for artists that want to develop their own live shows using technology. And it was really to fill that need, right? Because they don't have the budget to hire like a whole crew to go with them on tour. So they need to know how to set up their own stuff. They need to program their own show. They need to learn how to tech their own show. They need to troubleshoot their own show. So all of those things I decided to pour into an online course, and I'm getting ready to launch that.
Very soon.
Yes. Very, like, very soon.
In a couple days.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yes. Yeah. It's really cool. I've got some amazing people signed up, like, from all over the world, and also some pretty well-known film composers and artists. So I'm really, really excited about it.
Now, is that live course kind of a seminar-based thing, or is that something that's like, are you going to have Q&As or coaching, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so it's 8 weeks and there's 8 pre-recorded modules, but then I do a live Q&A once a week with the class, and there's like a Facebook group and people upload their content and, you know, meet each other on the group.
Yeah.
And there's like templates and all kinds of goodies that we give them along the way. So that's like the main one, and then there's an add-on, and they can do like an additional 8 sessions with me. There's a couple different packages, but we're almost full. So it's pretty, pretty cool to see it all come together. Yeah.
Is there like a particular, I guess like format, or is there, because with Ableton, like, you can kind of program it to be however you want it to be, you know, you can use a Wii control, you can use a Wii controller if you want to. So is there a particular sort of like gear setup that you kind of recommend to start off with, or is this kind of a course where you could just kind of learn how to do however you want to do it?
It's like choose your own adventure kind of, you know, it's like, okay, here are all the different kinds of things that you could use. Now, here are some artists and influences that you might have.
Right.
And that was one of the questions in the application, you know, is who are your influences and who inspires you? So looking at those artists, what inspires you about them? And how do you want to use those tools and those types of techniques to enhance your live performance? So I kind of go through that, and it's just a step by step. Like every week is like, okay, now you know what tools you're going to use. So now let's figure out like how you're going to set it up. Are you going to be, you know, more improvisational? Are you doing mostly looping stuff? Are you playing and you just want to play to a timeline? There's all different kinds of ways to approach it. And so it's really just like choosing which kind is best for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one thing I've also, I play in a rock band, mm-hmm. and it kind of started off as sort of a producer-songwriter project that my friend started, and then we played a show in December, I played on guitar, and we kind of wanted to avoid having backing tracks, mm-hmm. just because it was our first show, and we wanted to just kind of go out there naked.
Yeah.
But one of the things that has always been sort of a little bit of a crux for me when it comes to being a band that is we're mostly filling out the sound. Uh-huh. But maybe if we want that kind of extra backing track, is that we don't really have the ability, like something I've always been worried about is not having the ability to have a part extend out if you need it to uh-huh. extend out.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I saw a band play a couple weeks ago and the guitar player went out, he's a guitar player singer, and he went out into the crowd and he didn't make it back in time for the last chorus.
Oh.
So the last chorus backing track had started playing before he made it yeah. back to. So one question that I have for you is like, how would you bridge that gap? Like, how can you marry that?
Well, you have to have someone on stage okay. who can be in control of this stuff.
Right.
You know, if it's just you on stage, then you have to get back there in time. Right. Or have some sort of controller where you can kill the backing vocals or, trigger a loop or just have like a contingency plan for if that happens.
Right.
You know, that's why, you know, especially in smaller settings, like backing vocals can be a little dicey, mm-hmm. you know, cause it's so obvious, right? It's so obvious that they're coming in. Now, if you're in a stadium and you're at an Ariana Grande show and the chorus comes in, you want to hear that really full. You want to hear all the backing vocals. There's going to be background vocalists on stage. It's going to be really full. So, it really just depends on the setting that you're in and, you know, just planning ahead, right? And then sometimes you screw up. Sometimes you go out in the crowd and you can't make it back in time and it's just like, okay,
that's just all right,
my backing vocals just came in, you know, and you just gotta like rock with it or whatever. So there's different ways to navigate it for sure. But I would say like as you progress and like kind of practice more, stuff like that doesn't really happen as much.
And then you kind of figure out, I guess like
timing.
Timing and figure out as well, like what, or I guess you could build it into the song. Okay. This is a song that might mm-hmm. stretch out a little bit longer.
Yeah. How and then when you get back on stage, you trigger the chorus to come in or something and it loops until that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just having some sort of contingency plan, I think is good.
And just really planning ahead for it.
Yeah. If you can. Yeah. And sometimes people are in the moment, you know, and they just want to be living in the moment. So,
yeah, for
you
sure.
know, yeah. I think if it's more rockin' for them to be out in the audience and like just connecting with the fans in that way, then maybe like the fans aren't caring, you know, about the backing vocals coming in or whatever. Cause it's like, whoa, this person's in the audience. This is super cool. Like years ago, I may have been like a little bit more, you know, snobby about it. Like, oh my gosh, I could hear their backing vocals.
It's
got to
be perfect.
You know? But now it's like about the energy, you know, like some of the best artists or some of the best performers aren't really that great of artists.
Right.
You know, it's really interesting. Like you see some artists perform and you're like, okay, you're not that great of a singer, but you're an amazing performer. And it's that energy, you know, that they bring. And so bringing the energy and the comfortability and just like owning it on stage, I think is like the most important thing. First of all. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Very cool. So let's take it from, let's step back a little bit back to like kind of when you first started doing this programming for like live shows and things like that. Like what was your first break on that career path? Like what was the first sort of break into that field? Because that's a field that how do you get in that? Like, how do you get into that line of work? How does that work?
Yeah. It's weird. A lot of people ask me that, like, how do I get in? I'm like, you have to know someone, you know, you really do. It's not like you can just go and like, well,
go down to the job store.
Now you can like take a course on it because my company actually has a course called Master Track. That's in March in LA. We did it last year for the first time and trained a few people who from my company that went on to tour with like Ariana and Mariah Carey and Big Sean and all these big artists. So that was really cool.
Yeah.
But like, in the past, there's been no like training program for this kind of work. So back when I started in 2009, I had gotten certified at Ableton. I was working at Ableton, and they made me the first certified trainer because I was working there and helping them to develop the program. And after that, I started my own company, and I was doing a lot of consulting for, you know, different artists. And I got a call from Cirque du Soleil,
right.
And they were like, "Hey, do you want to move to Las Vegas and program this Cirque show for 4 months?" And I was like, "Yeah!" Like, I didn't even know that was even like an option, you know. So I didn't know that was a job. So,
right.
I said yes, and I had no idea what I was doing. And I went out there and I learned a whole hell of a lot. And that kind of started me on my path. And then I had also, like, previous to that, had met a guy who was Kanye's engineer. And when I got back from the Vegas thing, I ended up getting reconnected with him through a friend. And they ended up saying, "Hey, do you want to, like, go on tour?" And so that's how that started. And so that was like in 2011. So,
okay.
Yeah. So that started, and I just kind of, you know, just kept doing that and kept getting more calls, you know, to do music programming, design stuff, and decided that I wanted to clone myself. I was getting all these great calls, like The Weeknd called me in 2012 and, "Hey, do you want to come on tour with The Weeknd?" And I was like, "Well, I can't because I'm busy with Kanye, but I really love The Weeknd and
right.
I want to be a part of it." So I just said, "Hey, do you, I have this guy that, you know, I've trained and I'll put him on tour with you." And they said, "Okay." And so that was kind of how my company got started, was because I started putting people on these tours and training them, and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it became a thing.
I feel like that's like a sign. I feel like that's a really good goal to have, is like, I want to have to clone myself.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's, you know, of course the challenges that come with that, but
yeah.
But it's cool because I was able to give my friends a lot of opportunities.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just, I mean, it's just who you know and building out your skill set to be that person.
Absolutely. Yeah,
the go-to
yeah.
person.
Yeah, definitely.
I've heard a lot about that. Like, just being available and being the best at what you do is probably
most of it.
The move.
Yeah, and good communication. You know, like, a lot of people say, like, "Well, how do I get into this? And, like, what does it take?" And people think, "Oh, I need to be really technical."
Right.
Yes, you do. "I need to be really musical." Yes, you do. But the number one thing that I tell people is communication, you know, because
right.
when you're on these big tours, people want to be around people that are cool and that have your back and that will help you out. And if you're not about that, then people will just, like, not ask you to come back on tour.
Right.
So I made it a point for everyone that I hire through my companies, like, has that, those characteristics, you know, like good communication, you know, genuinely love for the work, love for the community. And, you know, I've built up like a great infrastructure with my company so that there's tons of support technically and even emotionally, you know, cause there's a lot of stuff that happens out there on the road that's really, really tough mentally and emotionally. And so having that support, I think, is really key.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta be there when you get those like 4 AM phone calls.
Yeah.
End of the rope kind of phone calls.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. All kinds of stuff happens, you know, from people saying stuff and you're just at your wit's end to like artists not making their minds up and making decisions quickly, or just being tired. You know, you're on the road, you're not seeing a hotel room for a few days, you know, you're just exhausted and make mistakes, and, you know, people are just all tired and crabby and, you know, and then it's tough conditions too. Like sometimes if the bus breaks down or you don't arrive in time, and then you got to rush to set up, and then, you know, the artist wants to change the whole show, and there's just like so many scenarios that happen, you know.
Does that happen? Do you go over that kind of stuff in your class too? Like,
oh yeah, there's a lot of like, yeah, just like practical type stuff. And like last year we had a bunch of people come in from the biz and just talk to the class and just the stories were the best part, you know, because just the, there's a lot of funny stories and there's a lot of not so funny stories. Yeah. But, you know, I wish that I had something like that when I got into it because I had no idea what I was getting myself into. You know? And so to have that, like the people that I trained that went on to do great things, this especially this past year, like preparing them for that and them just going out and excelling, it was like, okay.
Yeah.
Like I'm so happy that I was able to like give you this knowledge so that you could go out there and just kill it.
That's it.
You know, yeah, because when you're like, when I started, I just had to figure it all out, you know, and I did, and I didn't get fired, which is great, but it was still like, how do I do that? Like, you know, there's so many rules for the road. There's like so many rules that you don't even know. And like, if you don't know them, it's apparent, you know? And then when you're green, people are just like, oh, you don't know what you're doing out here, do you?
Right.
And then some people are cool with that and they'll take you under your their wing, but then some people are really not cool about that. And it's those people that make the tours
really tough.
Yeah, really tough. So, yeah.
It's but probably tough too, going into it, being green at something that's so new. Because like when you, you know, when you first went on tour with Kanye, like doing what you were doing was such a new thing.
Totally. Yeah. It was like literally like step by step, like we're all figuring out how it worked together.
Yeah.
And that was cool. You know, there was, I mean, there was pressure, but it was, we kind of took it step by step, which was cool.
It's very cool.
We were all like figuring out like, oh, we could add this and we could add this. And it just, we started adding more and more rather than like starting with like this whole huge thing, you know, cause a lot of artists now they see what's possible and they're like, oh, I want to do like everything. And then it doesn't go well because they don't actually rehearse it and you know, practice. So, yeah, it's a balance. Yeah.
Definitely. So I'm not sure if you want to get into this at all. But you, I mean, you're doing something that I think your field, at least being an engineer, a live engineer is, I feel like is kind of a male dominated field a little bit.
Yeah.
Is it? I mean, is that, what was your experience about being a woman doing what you're doing? I mean, you're a trailblazer in many different ways. What was your experience like cutting your own path? Or do you think maybe, I don't know, like you tell me, I mean, I, you know more about this than I do. So,
yeah, I mean, it definitely was a challenge, you know, especially early on, not even really in the touring world, but just like in music and technology.
Yeah.
Like when I first started out, I really didn't know what I was doing, you know?
Yeah.
And so like everyone, you got to start somewhere. And so I felt a lot of that, a lot of times when I would go to play shows, like a condescending sort of attitude, you know, but I changed my energy around it and just started coming in with this, okay, I know what I'm doing.
Right.
I'm leading with that energy. And it was really when I shifted that, that it just stopped happening, you know? And I just was like, you know what? You can't F with me, you know, just can't. So, I think that was like, it took me a while to get there and, you know, like everyone, it's everyone's journey, you know, it's like everyone's journey is different. But now I don't feel that at all. You know, I feel like when I go to do these gigs, it's like, you know, I don't feel that energy at all. So it's good. But yeah, definitely a challenge. Like there's people on tour saying stuff, you know, sexist things, not necessarily about my work, but just, you know, like, it's just uncalled for, you know? And, but I realized that like while I could get really angry about it, I don't have the energy for that to like hold that in. So, you know, I just understand that people come from, have been taught different things. They come from all walks of life. Maybe, you know, they had a certain situation in their past. It doesn't make it right or okay, but I'm just gonna move past that and just like keep on doing my thing and just really not focus on it, you know? And so unless it's like a blatantly obvious thing that needs to be handled.
Right.
But yeah. That's my general feelings about it. And, you know, more and more women are becoming sound engineers and getting into the industry. And so it's really cool to see that. And just like love to help empower women as much as possible and show them, you know, what they can do and that it is possible to work in this field and still, just get that same respect and love that you do in any other field.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's a really good thing.
Thanks.
It's always interesting too. I feel like, a lot of different industries, especially in technology industries, there are unsung heroes that were the trailblazers that actually were women.
Right.
So like a lot of the early programmers were women. A lot of the early, people that worked on synthesizers were women.
Totally.
And it's just interesting that like, I almost feel like as you just cut your own paths in certain ways.
Yeah. A lot of those women are getting more shine now, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's important that we know who they are and what they've done for sure. Yeah.
Do you still find time to tour these days? Are you still touring at all? Or are you still right now just focused on your classes and developing your classes and things like that?
Right now, I wouldn't say I'm focused on my classes. Mm-hmm. I'm just focused on my personal brand. You know, it's all part of my brand. And, you know, I was releasing music under the pseudonym Alux for a few years and that was great. And I decided to start releasing music under my own name again because of who I am and what I'm doing in the industry and just kind of bringing it all together, which has been really great for me. And just released an EP a few months ago and putting that out was awesome. And I've been performing a lot of my own shows. I was just played and spoke at the Ableton Loop Conference. I just played in New York last weekend. I'm doing South by Southwest, doing a bunch of presentations and performances there. And my course, online course Transmute, is coming up. And then Master Track, the playback live show design program, will be in March. So, yeah, it's just like all of these kind of things to just share knowledge,
right.
You know, build community, and make music and perform music, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my focus. And of course my company as well. And I'm the CEO of the company. So, we've got a roster of about 10 or so engineers that are going out on the road. And so I just hired a general manager and he's, doing more of the management stuff there. So yeah, just creating opportunities there, creating infrastructure there, building the company. And, it's just, you know, a lot of just building things. I don't know. I guess I just, haven't done things like the, you know, traditional way to, so to speak, because I just like to create and build things and make things from scratch. So I'm just like trying new things. So that's really cool. And, I haven't been working a lot with other artists. I have been designing some shows here and there. The last time I toured was 3 years ago with Miguel. I was DJing for him and opening for him and his band, and that was great. I just decided, you know, touring is just a challenge, and I did it for a long time. And so now I'm just really focused on my own work and helping other people to fill my shoes out there in the touring world. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. And then too, I mean, I feel like you can be in the position you are now, instead of being responsible for one show, you can be responsible for all the shows that your whole company is responsible for.
Yeah, which is cool.
Do you have input on, like, do you still review the work that your company does, like for each one? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So, well, I definitely work with our engineers to make sure that they have all the tools that they need. Moral support, emotional support, all that stuff. I have an infrastructure now. I've got a few techs that live in LA that help support them as well. There's just a lot of community and support there that's been built up. But sometimes I'll come in at the very beginning of a tour and help to design the show and just put things together, and then I'll have someone go out on the show and engineer it.
Okay.
That's kind of generally how it works. Occasionally, like for example, I've been working a lot with Aluna George over the last year. She's a friend of mine and worked directly with her on her show to program it and set it up. Yeah. So yeah, I pick and choose, but I don't actually go out on tour unless I'm going to be like the featured artist or right. something like that.
Tour yeah. for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll do some shows. I am going to be performing at the Grammy premiere event next week, which is like the Grammys for all of the other 80 categories that right. are shown at the main televised event. So that's going to be cool. It is going to be live streamed. It's like a 3-hour ceremony for like everyone. So I'm going to be DJing and doing playback and electronic stuff and some violin for yeah. that. So I just, you know, I keep busy doing all sorts of little events and stuff and performing and just hoping to inspire people to like take their music and art and their live performance to the next level and like elevate what they're doing.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Who is maybe one of the more interesting artists that you've worked with that people probably wouldn't know about? Or maybe uh-huh. deserves more recognition for doing something pretty creatively, or maybe an artist that you've seen that you didn't work with that do something creatively in this field of live looping and live performance and things like that.
Well, okay, so I haven't worked with this person, but right. I have utmost respect for this artist named Beardy Man, okay. who's just like a crazy live looper.
Yeah.
Just mind-blowing stuff. It's amazing. I know him though.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, as far as like artists that most of the artists that I've worked with have actually been pretty well known. It's interesting. But one that I think is like different from the rest is Herbie Hancock.
Okay.
Because you know, Herbie's been around, gosh, for decades now.
Yeah.
And I remember working with him on his show and he wanted like a controller, one station and another controller, like, in the middle of the stage. And, you know, he had a keytar, he had like all different kinds of controllers and things and stations that he wanted to use. And I was like, oh, this is really, really cool to help him just like conceptualize his show. And, he said to me, okay, well, what are my tools? And so I showed him my live set and what I do. And then he said, okay, well, I'm going to take this. And we kind of just like took what I did and like changed it and made it into a format that he would utilize. And so
right.
that was super cool. Also like working with his stems, like finding out, like I remember working on the song Rocket and just being like, hey, like I can't figure out what tempo this is at. Like, you know, can you tell me? And he was like, well, it was hand played. Like the beat was hand played the entire way through, you know. This is like before like the drum machines, the sequencers
yeah.
and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, wow. Like this is so incredible to be like working with music like this, that is so innovative at the time. And still now, like I listen to that song, I'm like, yeah, this song is badass.
Definitely.
So working with him, he's like in his 70s and he's just got like a still childlike, you know, love and just constantly asking questions and just like learning about new things. And it's just like, it's so inspiring. So I'm like, when I'm 70 something, that's how I'm going to be too. I'm going to be on top of all the latest stuff and just like completely into it.
Like fully still in the cutting edge.
Yeah.
I still, can't believe that yeah. he's still like, all right, how are the, yeah. what's the most cutting edge way that I can do
totally.
My show?
Yeah, definitely. He just collaborated with Flying Lotus, you
that's
know, last
so nuts.
Year. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah.
He's one of those like unsung heroes, I feel like,
mm-hmm.
of the industry.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, I mean, he has won
a
bunch of Grammys.
He's yeah. pretty sung. But I guess like when you think of, you know, the main movers and shake, like when you think of like the big stars and stuff like that, like Herbie
yeah.
Hancock isn't the first person that
no.
people talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely, he's low key, but mega talented.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a cool experience for sure.
That's definitely gotta be great to be able to like work with talent like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cause I feel like too, especially doing what you're doing and with the client list that you have worked with, like you came in already at the highest, like you were working with Cirque du Soleil and that's like
mm-hmm.
the best of the best. Then you work with Kanye West and it's got to be crazy to have people that are like Herbie Hancock that are just like, oh shit, this is
mm-hmm.
for real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Know? Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool.
That's got to be really
yeah.
crazy.
And I love working with artists like, you know, that's why I decided to create my course, because so many artists were like, hey, we want to work with you, and they're all over the world. And I thought, well, I could just do this course and help them. And, just imparting like all this knowledge that I've amassed over the last, you know, 10 years of doing the live show work is like really cool to like distill it down into like a process. So
is there somebody that you would like to work with, but you haven't yet?
Bjork. Yeah.
Okay.
I joke around, all the time. People say, oh, do you tour? And do you want to tour anymore? And I say, no, the only person I would tour with if they asked me to is Bjork, you know.
Really?
I'd be in Bjork's band for sure.
Yeah.
Now there's other artists too that, I mean, I'm like a massive fan of like Imogen Heap, and there's a bunch of people.
She does great stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of cool artists out there, doing forward thinking things, but yeah, just any artists that like want to push boundaries, you know, I'm down.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Before, you know, you mentioned as far as like advice, as, you know, be good at what you do.
Yeah.
You know, be as friendly as you can be, communicate.
Yeah.
Be a positive person to be around, things like that.
Yeah.
Do you have any other sorts of pieces of advice for people that maybe are coming up in the industry doing something that's kind of a unique path like you have cut?
Yeah, just network. I mean, just a lot of networking, and just also like putting in the hours, you know, like really putting the hours to know your stuff, and also knowing what you don't know.
Okay.
Like there's stuff now that I'm like, oh yeah, I need to learn how to do that, you know? And so just knowing what you don't know, cause a lot of people don't know what they don't know. I know that sounds silly, but then, you know, they get into the moment and it's like, oh, I should have been aware that I needed to know this for this gig or whatever. Just like doing as much research as possible and like just trying to be around the right people. And yeah, just being a good person, being a kind, positive, you know, supportive person that doesn't hold your cards so close to your chest that you don't allow yourself to get in any circles, you know, because I see a lot of people, especially in the past, like it's not as much now because like there's like a YouTube video for like every technique, but in the past it was like, oh, we're not going to share how we do this, you know, because we don't want you to excel or do better. And it's really about the person that's doing these things. And so I'm all about sharing, you know, I'm all about just collaborating and sharing and just helping to elevate one another. Because if we all rise up, you know, then that's better than just one of us rising up.
You know? Definitely. Like if you want to go far, you go together.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to go fast, you go alone.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
What did you think about that book that Ableton came out with?
Oh, yeah. The Creative Explorations. Yeah, my friend Dennis actually wrote that. And I used to work with him at Ableton 10 years ago. He's a good friend. Yeah, it's great. I sometimes just like go to a page and I'm like, okay, what am I doing? You know?
Yeah.
Like just for ideas, you know? It's cool to, like especially when I'm stuck or just I'm not sure where I'm going with something. Yeah, it's really cool.
I heard that Brian Eno had a deck of cards made that had those sorts of like get out of the
The oblique strategies.
I would love to get a copy of that because I have the Ableton book. As soon as I found out Ableton was coming out with a book, I was like, oh, I gotta get this. But I would love to get a copy of that Brian Eno deck.
The oblique like strategies. It's
bridge
so cool.
Bridges the gap.
I'm all about like texts like that aren't like super technical, but just more like about process, you know, and exploring.
Definitely.
Yeah. That's my jam for sure.
Process is, I think, I would argue the process is more the most important thing when it comes to making music.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with that.
It's your process, like in your instruments that kind of define what your music ends up sounding like. And, and also too, did you ever read that book? It was by, singer of the Talking Heads.
No, David Byrne?
Yeah, David Byrne, How Music Works.
Oh, I haven't read it, but I've seen it.
One of the things that he talked about in it was that music is written for the space that it's meant to be heard in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's how it's been since the beginning of music. Like music has always been written for the space that it's meant to be heard in.
Yeah. That's great.
So like you like performing for theaters. So yeah. You're going to be more innate to writing music that's
for sure.
Good for theaters. Kanye is a stadium guy.
Yeah.
And he makes music that's like for stadiums or even talking about Ariana Grande, like having the big choruses.
Yeah.
Or there's, you know, you think about techno is supposed to be in like concrete rooms, like in, you know, in clubs.
Yeah.
Maybe not concrete rooms, but, or like punk rock and things like that. And I always thought it's interesting the way the dialogue is between like the tools that you have and where you want the music to be heard, especially nowadays with, normally when people are writing a song, it's getting written straight into the production of the song.
Yeah.
As opposed to like piano and or guitar.
Yeah.
This is my piano.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm strumming guitar while I say piano. I've been interested in playing with process more as time goes on. I've been curious about like going back to like having just cutting to tape, like getting a 4-track tape.
Oh yeah.
But I've been interested in like just getting rid of the computer and just seeing where things go.
Totally. There's a lot of cool gadgets around that right now.
Yeah.
You know, I just got an OPZ from Teenage Engineering.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So that's been a cool toy playing around with that. It's just like, don't need a computer. Just can jam on this.
Pretty nice.
Yeah.
Have you ever felt gadget or plug-in overload?
You know, I yes, sometimes, but I've pretty much slimmed down my studio to just like what I need. You know, I used to have like a ton more stuff and I kind of sold a lot of things
because
I was like, okay, have I used this in the last year? No. Okay. Like the whole Marie Kondo thing. Does this spark joy?
Right.
I haven't actually seen that, but
it's good.
I've heard
the book's much better.
People
than
joking
the show.
About it. So I'm like, oh yeah, I did that with my studio.
Yeah.
Yeah. So stuff like that I think is important to not have too many tools, you know, because when you have too many, you're just overwhelmed, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, like do you know Richard Devine?
No.
He's a sound designer and he's got this studio. I mean, you should definitely check out some photos. He's got like every modular synth module known to man.
Right.
And it's wild to see his studio. I'm like, wow, how does he know what all of this stuff does? And it's like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But he makes the best sounds. And I totally understand why he's got all that. But I just don't know how he does it.
Yeah. I've been waiting to get into the modular thing.
Yeah. It's a little bit of like a money pit. If you dive in, you know, like friends of mine have been like, yeah, I'm going to get into modulars. And like, it's like, man, I just spent like $20,000, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a lot,
oh,
but it's
wait.
Cool.
Yeah. One day.
Yeah. 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 There's a lot you could do with software. So that's cool.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like how they're doing the emulations now.
Oh yeah.
Modular emulations.
Yeah.
Has been
so
nice.
Much.
Then I can actually learn how to work it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's definitely a little tough to get into that.
Yeah. Well, if you can't afford, you know, the real thing, then definitely the software stuff, you can learn how to use all of it.
Or just
there.
Go hang out at Perfect Circuit until they kick you out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I love that place.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where I got my mini tar from,
okay.
from Perfect Circuit.
Oh, sweet.
We're going to get into some nerdy stuff looking around my studio. putting it through my guitar pedal rig has been really nice.
Ooh,
so
sweet.
I can get some pretty intense stuff going. Yeah.
That's awesome. Definitely. I got to hear that.
Yeah. Maybe we can mess around after a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're getting close to the end here. Let me think of my, I have like a list of my ending questions that I ask. What is the book that you have gifted the most?
Ooh.
Like not your favorite book, because that's an easy, or even favorite book is a hard question to ask. But what is the book that you would say that you have given the most or maybe would like to give the most?
This book called Peak.
Okay.
About peak performance habits and just process, really. A friend of mine gifted it to me and I read it and I was like, wow, this is really good stuff. So that's one that I definitely love. Also, Loving What Is by Byron Katie. It's a completely different thing, but right. Yeah, just thought work and questioning our beliefs and thoughts. And I think, you know, I've done a lot of self-reflection, especially over the past couple of years. And I went to a retreat that she did last year, and it was like 9 days with no phone and no laptop and no internet and all that kind of stuff. And it was amazing because I really just got to zoom in on my thoughts and how I was perceiving different things in my life and move past those things. And so definitely Loving What Is, just would gift that to everyone, I think, as a book to read, because reading that really changed my life, you know. And it's an awareness thing, and I was aware of it, but the way that she breaks it down, it's very simple, and it's like, oh, okay, like, we are causing our own suffering,
right?
You know, and we're putting ourselves down, and we're carrying these thoughts about other people and are worried about what they're thinking and their thoughts. And, you know, it just can drive us just crazy, right? And so to move past that, or like just at least question those thoughts, be like, okay, is that just a thought that I'm thinking, or is that real? Like, do I really think that that happened? Do I right. really believe that this person thinks that? Do I, you know, should I be thinking about that? Like, should I be, like, as she says, in this other person's business, you know?
Right.
Just stuff like that. I don't know. Like, I just love it. It just, it provides so much freedom, because if you're not aware of it and then you become aware of it, it's the key to freedom. I think mental freedom for me, and it's helped a lot of people that I know as well. So yeah. It's really cool stuff.
Very cool. Yeah. I've heard of Byron Katie before. So I've seen a couple of her videos online. And
yeah.
Stuff.
I love her. She's great. Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of power in, like, especially when you're presented with these negative thoughts, like, what am I doing about this?
Yeah.
Like, is it worth it for me to continue to think about this, or am I going to just let it go?
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So how can people find you and find information about your course and things like that?
Yeah, so I'm Laura Escude on all socials. So it's LauraEscude. And my program is on my website. It's called Transmute. And then my company is Electronic Creatives, and that's electroniccreatives.com. We've also got an Instagram and all that good stuff. So you can follow both or one or the other, depending on what you're into. And, we're always just posting fun, nerdy stuff, on the EC Instagram and mine too. So
cool.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Thank you so much. This was great.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
So that's our show. If you'd like to keep up with all the Industry Talks news and find out when and where our next panel is taking place, check us out online at industrytalks.net. I'm Roman Perry, and you can reach me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is @RomanPerryMusic on both platforms. And I want to give a shout out to my partners, Kyle Emerson Brown, the founder of Industry Talks, and Danny Klein. Also, Morgan Yoder, who is my assistant editor on the podcast. She's been a massive help for me. And the rest of our interns who help us out with all of our events. As always, thanks for listening, and I'll see you in a couple weeks.